Ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome to another edition of the FightfulSelect.com 205 Live NXT Mae Young Classic Recap Show. What an exciting time to be alive these days, to hang out at home on Wednesday evenings. WWE have stacked, absolutely stacked these Wednesdays with fantastic shows, fantastic action, and I am privileged to be able to come here and talk about it, discuss with you and with everyone here in chat tonight. John, Smidget are here. If you're currently hanging out, watching this, perhaps live, but not exactly invested in the chat, come drop in. It's a lot of fun. Because the content is fun. When I talk about the content, I don't mean necessarily myself. I mean the shows that we're watching here, that we watched here tonight. We're going to talk about it on FightfulSelect.com. Guys, you're already members. You already know all the great stuff you have here. Go check it out. A lot of great stuff coming up. You know, Friday, Sean and I are going to be taping not one, but two retro pay-per-view reviews that are always super fun to do. I guess you'd say I kind of suckered Sean into watching a pay-per-view hailing from San Antonio. Faithful Fightful members will know that Sean has a bit of beef with the city of San Antonio. SummerSlam 1994, not a glorious show, but a lot of fun nonetheless. World War III 1998. Oh, we're going to have a wonderful afternoon. Sean and I are going to bond. We are going to bond, folks. But for the time being, right now, we are going to jump right in to everything we have to talk about. There's a lot of stuff again tonight, and we are going to go right ahead with 205 Live, where we get basically a breakdown to begin with as the show opens. Regarding the Fatal Five Way, which is going to be the main event of the evening, which will include such gentlemen as TJP, Grand Metalik, Lio Rush, Tony Nese, and former Cruiserweight Champion. I take a wee bit of pleasure, I'll be perfectly honest, just a little bit of pleasure in saying that. Former Cruiserweight Champion Cedric Alexander. No, he was never a bad person. It was just time for a change. It's not on him. So we're going to be getting that a little later. Basically establishing some stakes for the match. You know, we've got two pairings of feuds, of sparks of discord among certain participants. Where TJP has beef with the Lucha House Party. Tony Nese pinned Cedric Alexander last week. And Lio Rush is basically, you know, he just has beef. He has beef with everyone. But before we get to that, we have Drew Gulak versus Akira Tozawa. Jack Gallagher, of course, is accompanying Drew Gulak in this, the new formation, the new duo, once a trio, now a duo. Drew Gulak, since they dumped Brian Kendrick to the curb, Gulak gets in the ring and he doesn't want people to chant, but Akira Tozawa does. He gets the people doing the chants. Some lockups at first. Tozawa gets a run on Drew. It's a mid kick, a senton very quickly on, cover for two. Very signature offense by Akira right there. He stomps Gulak in the corner, goes in with some strikes, and he goes in with some strikes and he waits till Drew is done blocking a strike and just jabs him right in the mouth. Gets a nice octopus stretch onto Drew as well, but Gulak eventually gets in control, hits a backbreaker over the knee. Follow away slam, goes for the cover, only gets two. Gulak then locks up the legs as if he was going for a surfboard. He pulls back a little bit, Gulak then transitions. He gets Akira Tozawa on his back for a gory special. Tozawa nicely reverses it by sort of leaning forward off the back, leaning forward and onto his feet. That was a nice little evasion move. Gulak rolls through and into a power bomb, goes to a cover for two. Gulak then has Akira on the ground and he has him in a headlock and he's freaking biting his ear. He's got his teeth sunk into the cartilage right up here. I agree, Smidget. The ear bite was really weird, and I don't understand why the referee wasn't doing anything. Like, we couldn't see the ref in the shot. It was really a close up of the action. But the ref just let it happen. Thank goodness there weren't any severe injuries, because that would have been bad for the ref's career. All right. Series of dodges and blocks by Drew, who finally gets by Akira, who finally gets a spinning kick to Gulak's head. Goes for a missile drop kick. He hits a shining wizard that doesn't quite fully connect, but it's still good enough to get Drew Gulak to the outside of the ring. He dives, Akira then dives to the outside on both Gulak and Jack Gallagher. And he goes to the top rope, probably for the frog splash or maybe his top rope senton. We'll never know, because Jack Gallagher flips him off the rope. He doesn't flip him off, you know. He flips him off the top turnbuckle and forces the disqualification. Good job, ref, on that, at least. Referee'll, you know, he'll let people bite each other, dig into their fleshy parts. But when it comes to just pushing a guy off the top rope, no, 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 that's where he draws the line. Gallagher and Drew go after Akira. Then they start beating him up. But here comes the Brian Kendrick for the save. Akira was about to get into the Gulak, and it's my show, so I'm going to say it again, just like I say it every week when I have to say those words. The Gulak is a stupid name for the move. It should be just very simply the Dragon Sleeper. It's fantastic. It just works. Gulak. Drew Gulak. Gulak. Yeah, so he was about to put Akira into it, but Kendrick hits the ring, forearms on Jack Gallagher, and he gets him in the captain's hook. But Drew saves Jack Gallagher, and the heels run off with their tails between their legs. You know, if I were Brian Kendrick, I'd be really, really mad at... I'd be really particularly angry at Jack Gallagher, because let's not forget that it was Kendrick and Gallagher who were a team for a very long time, who looked out for each other, and then decided to warm themselves up to Drew Gulak, seeing an advantage to join him, to have him in the ranks. And then that son of a bitch, Jack Gallagher, just tosses Kendrick to the wayside for the other dude. Come on. That's grade A betrayal right there. I don't think we talk enough about how much of a backstabbing, two-timing piece of crap Jack Gallagher is. Sell you his mother for a ham sandwich. It was a fine match. Nothing wrong with it. It was good. The typical fare from your opening 205 Live match. We go backstage and we have Drake, I was going to say Drake Alexander, Drake Maverick, backstage congratulating Bubbly. Hang on a second. Give me a second here, folks. Wouldn't want to call him Bubbly Murphy. I feel he'd come after me. Hope this doesn't reach him. I'm suddenly terrified. Last thing I'd want is Buddy Murphy with a chip on his shoulder looking to get back at me. So Drake congratulates Buddy Murphy on his championship win. As we recall last week, Buddy Murphy stayed in Melbourne because he's the champion, does whatever he wants. But now he's backstage. Too bad they didn't have him come out to do a little segment. That would have been nice. Yes, Midget, I'm botching a bit. But I'll power through. I'll be fine. And Nice is there as well. And basically, Buddy Murphy here says that they're going to build the new 205 Live under his reign. He and the only other guy who defeated Cedric Alexander this year, Tony Nice. Then we have a Niphone promo with Mike and Maria Kanellis saying that they've been waiting for a long time for this kind of opportunity, and they took it. They're very happy with the information for the invitation, and now they are the new power couple of 205 Live. Makes me wonder who was the old power couple of 205 Live. Perhaps it was Jack Gallagher and the Brian Kendrick. Or was it Enzo and Drew? I don't know. Next week, they've already announced that we're going to get Mike Kanellis in his first match since his return against Lince Dorado, who he attacked last week. Hideo Itami, who cuts a mostly Japanese promo on Mustafa Ali. And then Mustafa Ali cuts his own promo outside in his own street style. It's raining, you know, and I like the change in mood and in atmosphere and the production that Mustafa Ali puts into his promos. I'm assuming he does them himself because they don't, I feel like he does them at home. He gets his buddies and they grab some cameras and they try some stuff out and then he sends it over to production. I liked it. I thought that was I like when he does that. It's not the first time he's done it. It's a nice little change of pace, good feel to it. Adds to his character that he's very grounded, very street savvy, street wise, street smart. So lots of levels of knowledge in the streets, folks. pick the one you feel fits Mustafa Ali the most. I like it. Nice little flavor. The rain added some nice impact. So we're getting that false count anywhere match next week. And I'm glad because I need a week to prepare my body for that. I think it's going to be something else. Main event time. Again, 205 Live shortened this week to make time for the mixed match challenge. Thank you, everyone. I was able to say it on the first try. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm getting there. TJP versus Grand Metalik versus Leo Rush versus Tony Nese versus Cedric Alexander. Fatal five-way. I like how TJP comes to the ring and he's wearing Kalisto's mask around his neck like some kind of big game hunter trophy. I think that's a nice little touch. Match starts. Lots of people get thrown out of the ring until Cedric Alexander and Leo Rush are left. Leo Rush starts running the ropes. Starts running the ropes like only he can, you know, doing his speedy little momentum shifts, hard to keep up. But as he tries to do the slide between Alexander's legs, he grabbed them. Was like, no, this is not going to happen. Alexander goes for an arm drag. Goes for a Rana, but Rush lands on his feet. But then Rush hits a Hurricane Rana of his own, and that one works. He sends him to the outside, and Nice runs Cedric Alexander down. Cedric Alexander, for the first third, or even the first, for the first third of this match, is completely neutered. He can't do anything. He'll be on the outside, and people just making sure he stays down. Springboard flying body press by Metalik on Leo Rush was really cool. Then he does a middle rope drop kick. Goes for the cover, but Nice throws him out of the ring. Tony Nice misses a moonsault on Leo Rush. He ducks an attack by Leo, goes for some kicks. Rush answers with kicks of his own, takes Nice out, and this gets a nice reaction for the crowd because I failed to mention this. He's in his hometown. So people are really, really happy to see Leo Rush. TJP then is in the ring. He locks both Rush and Mitalik in with stretches, which actually look kind of convincing. You know, I'm not a fan of double submissions usually, but I found this was applied with a certain amount of care, looked good, and that allows him to try and unmask Mitalik. Might as well go for three, right? But it doesn't happen. Nice breaks it up. Tony Nese rolls up TJP, then Rush comes after him and he grabs Lio Rush and puts them both in a pinning position. So basically he has a jackknife pin on TJP, flips Rush over into a bridge, the referee's counting, Mitalik breaks it up. That was pretty cool. Nese is back. Nese hits a back suplex on Grand Mitalik then. And he sees Alexander coming in and he tosses him to the outside. Been useless so far. He gets Mitalik in a tree of woe and he stomps him. There was a lot of tree of woe stomps in all three shows tonight. And then he stomps while doing crunches. He's basically on his back doing crunches and his feet are like going pom, 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 pom. It was kind of funny. It was silly. Like it didn't look painful, but it was a cool spot, and I think it works with Nese's character as well. And he's always talking about how, you know, how he trains and how strong and powerful he is, and you know, his 8-pack. Yeah, let's make this happen. We'll move on a little bit here. Mitalik goes for a moonsault. Nese drops him and instead of catching, goes for a moonsault and Nese was supposed to catch him, but he sort of drops him, which was a bit of a shame. He gets him in a fireman's carry instead. Mitalik reverses it into a brain buster and Cedric Alexander comes in and finally does something. He breaks up this pin. Alexander starts fighting back, springboard forearm over the top rope onto Mitalik, which was really nice. He got a lot of height on that. He trips up Nese, who lands in the corner. He dodges TJP from the apron. Flatliner from the apron onto Nese. Cover. And Lio Rush comes in to break it up. There's some top rope shenanigans between Lio Rush and TJP at this point. And TJP dumps Lio Rush off the top hard. Like, Rush lands really, really hard. And there's more top rope shenanigans, this time with Mitalik, with Alexander, Cedric Alexander and TJP. And this was a really cool spot of the entire evening. This was fantastic. I really like the execution of this. Nese drags Mitalik off the top rope in sort of an electric chair, and he rolls him up. Alexander has TJP. He hits a Michinoku driver, or is it a saber driver, on TJP. There's a cover. There's covers in the meantime. Referee's counting, but it's not working. And then as he hits the Michinoku driver, Lio Rush split-legged frog splashes off the top rope onto Cedric Alexander. That was really cool, and Nese breaks this pin up. That was a fantastic sequence. If you want to go out of your way to take a look at it, it's really, really cool. We'll keep going a little bit, heading towards the end here. We've got Nese counters a Lio Rush move. He deadlifts Lio Rush and just walks over towards the ropes. The three other guys are on the outside, and he's holding Lio Rush up like this in the deadlift, and he just tosses him outside onto everyone else. Lio Rush, we hardly knew ye. No. He goes outside, gets Rush back in the ring, covers him, only gets two. And TJP gets in, hits the knee bar on Nese. It's broken up by Alexander, but TJP releases the hold and locks it on Cedric Alexander instead. Then Mitalik comes and breaks that up. TJP runs the ropes as Mitalik is on the apron. Mitalik leapfrogs. This was another cool spot. He leapfrogs on the apron as TJP baseball slides out. And as he's up on the as he jumps, he hits a Nasai moonsault onto TJP on the outside. Mwah. That was some nice, nice work there. That was great. Match comes to an end when Rush goes up top with Nice on the ground. Alexander covers him, goes for a Rana, and counters it into a lumbar check, but a huge lumbar check on Leo Rush. But Nice comes out of nowhere and rolls up Cedric Alexander from behind and gets the win again. Two pins on the former cruiserweight champion. That was something I was not expecting. What I like about what they're saying, this was a very, very good match. Some fantastic spots. Go check it out. It's definitely worth your while. I like how they're starting to mix up the positioning of everyone on the card here. Tony Nese, you know, who was always a bit on the sidelines, now entering a more prominent position. I like how even, you know, they've been doing this for a few weeks now with the Lucha House Party. How it's not always about Kalisto. Now they're doing a pretty cool rotation between everyone. Cedric's newest position now as the former champ, maybe a little broken, maybe down on his luck, maybe he's entering a losing streak. I like this. You know what? I actually like this. I feel like I relate to what's going on with Cedric Alexander. I feel that his character has a little more juice to it, a little more stuff into it, and that's fantastic. I like how this is being set up here. Interesting stuff. Can't wait to see how this goes on. I'm completely for Tony Nese being put in a more prominent position. What a workhorse that guy is. 205 Live, check it out. Great episode again this week. Not as fantastic as last week's, but hey, last week was kind of special. And I'm really looking forward to chit-chatting next week about the Hideo Itami and Mustafa Ali match. NXT, guys. Double main event. We had our double main event tonight is the War Raiders versus the Undisputed Era for the NXT Tag Team Championships. And we also have Nikki Cross versus Bianca Belair. That's our double main event. So the first match of the night is the War Raiders versus the Undisputed Era. Now, I want to... I have a thought. Let's say someone looks down on the ground and sees a human skull. And that person goes down on one knee and cups the skull in his hand, raises it up to his face, level with his eyes, contemplating his own humanity as he stares into the skull. And a single question comes to that person's mind as he looks deeply into the abyss of the eye cavities. Is it truly a double main event if one of the matches kicks off the show? I am super hyped to see the Undisputed Era fight again. And guys, let's keep... This is what's fantastic and mind-boggling and always crazy when I think about Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong. You know, it was Strong. It was Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish who were the tag team. And they had tag team in Ring of Honor before. These are guys who know each other for years and had that chemistry, had that special spark that made them such a fantastic tag team. And Strong had just joined Undisputed Era, joined just before Bobby Fish got injured, and then was at first we kind of it was shoehorned for him to go into the to become the other guy who defends the title with Kyle O'Reilly. But you could never tell that these guys have been a tag team for about less than a year now, or about a year. That's bananas. The stuff they put on together, that was amazing. So we have some tests of strength to begin with, quickly the Undisputed Era go for some double teams. Rowe is in there. He double clotheslines both and drags Kyle O'Reilly to the corner so he can tag Hansen in. And I thought that was a really cool visual because the, you know, the War Raiders are so big and the war paint and everything. And he's just literally dragging Kyle O'Reilly. He was flailing around. That was really, that was Viking-like. That was very, very Viking-like. Henson's whipped into the ropes by the Undisputed Era. He no-sells their double clothesline. He bounces back, and in turn, he takes both of them down with clotheslines of his own. Kyle O'Reilly tries to leg bar Rowe while he's standing, but it was one of the no-selliest no-sells I have seen in a while. Rowe goes to gut wrench Kyle O'Reilly up top and Roderick Strong comes after him. And as he lifts Kyle O'Reilly up, he back body drops Roderick Strong. That was fantastic, fantastic timing. Rowe slams, Hansen onto Kyle O'Reilly, then slams Roderick onto Kyle O'Reilly, taking a lot of physical hits to begin with. Roderick takes out Rowe's knee, and that finally gives the Undisputed Era the advantage they wanted and needed because, ladies and gentlemen, Rowe is your babyface in peril for the better part of this match. Rowe tries to battle back despite the fact that he's hurt, but a backbreaker by Strong does the trick, goes for a cover, only gets two. Roddy then grapevines Rowe's leg. Kyle O'Reilly continues to work the leg, lots of kicks, but Rowe still tries to power out and uses his strength to try and tag in his partner. Can't do it. Kyle O'Reilly kicks, does a nice combination of kicks, a slap to the face, more combination kicks that ends with a leg sweep that was like butter. Goes for a cover, only gets two, though, because of all the butter. Just slipped out. The Undisputed Era are picking, they're picking Rowe apart with some quick tags in and out, some fantastic double teams. Baseball drop kick by Strong gets a cover, but only gets two. After some ground and pound by Strong, there, Kyle O'Reilly comes back in. Some more strikes. There's a lot of that. Dragon screw leg whip by Kyle O'Reilly as well. Keeps working the leg. More in and out tags. Amaro said it, you know, they were being surgical. That's exactly what was happening here. A fantastic ground game, great grappling. It was really, really cool. Kyle O'Reilly perfectly in his element here. I like the spot where Rowe again attempts to battle back and he tries to go over to Hansen, but Kyle O'Reilly sort of uses his legs and locks his heel so that he can't go forward. I thought that was cool. But Rowe finally gets a big body slam on Kyle O'Reilly, and Hansen gets the hot tag, gets a huge back body drop on Roderick Strong, who probably saw the rafters really up close, running crossbody. He cartwheels out of the way, Rowe does. Hansen does cartwheels out of the way to avoid Roddy's strike, and he strikes back with a huge lariat. Just takes him down. Gets a Bronco Buster on Strong, covers for two. Hansen throws Kyle O'Reilly into Rowe, does a running knee. Double team backbreaker on Roderick Strong. A little taste of your own medicine there, Messiah of the backbreaker. Power bomb. The cover's broken up by Kyle O'Reilly. They pull a double team springboard elbow drop. But Adam Cole runs in. And I like how when he runs in, he's very confident. But once he hits the ring, he's like, suddenly he's like, nope, maybe this wasn't the best idea. Hansen dispatches Cole back to the outside. That allows Roderick Strong to hit an Olympic slam, cover for two. Kyle O'Reilly goes back to working Rowe's knee, gets a heel hook in. Hansen catches Roddy and dumps him on Kyle, on Kyle O'Reilly. Kyle O'Reilly then boots Hansen, open palms, kick to the leg, pop a power slam by Hansen, but he's Hansen as well. Followed up by a drive to Roddy and Cole on the outside, a dive to Roderick and Cole who were on the outside. They do their double team pop up top rope guillotine leg drop on Kyle O'Reilly. The War Raiders do, but lo and behold, Bobby Fish runs in swinging the chair of doom, and he beats the absolute tar out of the War Raiders. Full Sail is completely into it. And man, did they ever beat down on War Raiders. Adam Cole is standing in the ring and he screams out, "We rule the world, baby." And you know what? You know what? They do. Change my mind. That was a fantastic match. That was really a lot of fun. What a way to start off with one of your double main events. That was so good, though. That was really, really good. Still, I'm still a bit befuddled, bemused, that O'Reilly and Strong have such good chemistry together. Now, Bobby Fish is back. I think we're going to go into full Freebird mode, Freebird rules here. I'm so happy that he's back. I hope he's 100%. I hope he's ready to go because I've missed Bobby Fish. Next, we have Britt Baker coming to the ring versus Shayna Baszler. Britt Baker, she's a prolific indie wrestler. She was part of that recently. She was part of that fantastic all-in women's match earlier in September. That was really, really good. She's also dating Adam Cole. And of course, commentary makes an Isaac Yankum reference because she's a dentist. Baszler goes right after Baker's arm, twisting it, manipulating it, pulling back on her leg, and then she does the elbow stomp on the elbow, and the ref calls for the match. She's complaining about her shoulder, reminds us of the Dakota Kai incident when way back months ago now. Now here's the thing. She looked injured, she acted injured, and she also went on Twitter and she confirmed that she injured her shoulder, apparently dislocated, if I'm not mistaken. She actually confirmed this and she said she'd be out of action for a few months. Adam Cole, backed up her tweet, saying, shoulder injuries are the worst, but you'll be back and it'll get stronger. So the question here is she legitimately injured? Because the ref didn't throw the X. No one did any X throwing. We've seen Shayna Baszler do this move, like I said, on Dakota Kai in the past to continue to establish the fact that she's this devastating monster. So is it kayfabe or is it real? Hard to say. If you were to ask me, if you say, Warren, go with your gut. Tell us what you think, Warren. Do you believe that this was kayfabe or that this injury is a work or if it's real? I would say it's a work because I think this essentially helped to set up Baszler. Again, keep fresh in our memories that she's this devastating torture beast who can hurt you badly, severely in many ways. We've seen her do this before. So I think that's what it was for, even though it was very awkward and very strange. I think that was the feeling you were supposed to get from it. But I don't know. I don't know if Britt Baker is on any official injury reports. We see William Regal backstage who says he doesn't know what Nikki Cross knows, but what he does know is that Aleister Black is returning soon. So he wants to talk to Nikki Cross after her match tonight. He wants to know what she knows. Laying down the law. There you go. You can't let the inmates run the asylum, Will. Good job. Let them know who's boss. We have Tian Bing and Rocky, two Chinese performance center signees, versus the returning Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch. Mauro says that that Rocky, who is a he's basically starting for WWE. He has never wrestled before, at least not according to Cage Match, and Cage Match usually gets this stuff spot on. He's homegrown WWE. He started at the Performance Center. Mauro says, in preparation for this match, Rocky chased chickens. In preparation. I'm like, wow, are they cutting back the Performance Center's budgets that severely? That they have to include live farm animals? They can't get proper equipment anymore? As for Tian Bing, he's trained under Antonio Inoki, as I think Mauro or Nigel mentioned during commentary as well. So that's some pretty good credentials there. Bing gets a Mongolian chop early on Lorcan. He levels him with a tackle. And then tags Rocky in. Rocky tags in, but Lorcan starts fighting off both guys. But Rocky gets a full Nelson on him. But Oney Lorcan fights out of it. Lariats Rocky down. Burch gets the tag. Missile drop kick. Headbutt. Bing is down. Implant DDT. That's that. I'm super super glad again that Oney Lorcan is okay, that he's back as well. Orbital bone injuries, you get, it's your face, right? In wrestling, it gets smashed around a lot. Hopefully it wasn't too serious. He wasn't out that long, so probably healed up okay. I'm really hoping that they give Lorcan and Burch something to chew on very quickly. Because it was very unfortunate that the injury happened after their takeover, was it Chicago 2 match? If anyone in the chat wants to correct me, feel free. But I think it was takeover Chicago 2 when they fought the Undisputed Era for the titles. That really helped establish in every NXT fan's mind that Lorcan and Burch were awesome as a team and had real potential. Coming out of that loss, they had so much momentum that now sort of died down. And you feel with the video packages that NXT want them to, they want to give them back some momentum because the tag division is in reconstruction. It has been for most of the year. I don't want to take anything away from Strong and Kyle O'Reilly. They've been fantastic as tag team champions, but there hasn't been any real competition. I think I've just discussed this before, but TM61 or the Mighty now, Street Profits, they're not there yet. I feel like Heavy Machinery is more of an act than anything more convincing than that. I don't think they're true contenders. You know, that one of the reasons they brought in War Machine, I think, is to help, grow the tag division, especially since AOP is gone. I felt Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan were part of this reconstruction, and I thought they were going to have a really great opportunity to shine. They still will, but man, it feels like they took a giant step forward, but they took two equally giant steps back. They have to rebuild what they had gained earlier this year. We'll see what happens, but I love these two guys, so I hope it goes well for them. We're going to get an announcement next week regarding the NXT Championship by William Regal. Join the speculation, they say. Who, what could happen? Who could it be? It's going to be Velveteen Dream. Smidget adds, I think the tag division is pretty solid. Mustache Mountain is there. Better than the main roster for the most part. Look, for the main roster situation, it's hard to argue. There's no tag team division on Raw. They can pretend there is, but in practice, there's none. SmackDown is pretty good, and especially with the title change that happened just this week, I think there's potential for great things to happen there still. I mean, there's still the Usos, Sanity, New Day, The Bar. Those are fantastic tag teams. But, and it's not that the NXT tag division isn't solid. It feels a little scattered right now outside of the feuds with Undisputed Era and Mustache Mountain. I think that we're going to see them at War Games, but I believe that we're going to be seeing them more and more. We're going to be seeing more of them at NXT UK now than anything else, which, by the way, you know, the Mae Young Classic is going to be ending soon. I'm going to need another show to review for this recap show. I've sort of gotten the groove for three shows now. Maybe I should add NXT UK. Maybe, depending on what time it airs. Maybe NXT UK is going to end up on. Maybe NXT is going to end up taking the time slot for the Mae Young Classic. Let me know. Let me know if you'd like me to talk about NXT UK, because I'm going to be watching it anyway. And then I'll chat with Sean and see what we can do. Main event, second double main event. No, not second double. Second main event of our double main event billing. Nikki Cross versus Bianca Belair. I really like this match. Nikki goes right after Belair at the bell and they brawl. And here's something that I really like. Is that these, Nikki and Bianca are overall very physical, very brawly kind of women. And we, in the whole strip that came up to WWE, you know, the Charlottes, the Becky, Sasha's, Bayley's, Asuka's, they're very well-rounded competitors. They do a lot of stuff. They do quite a bit of aerial technique as well, but there's no like real grounded, good old fashioned brawlers. And this is what I liked about this match. It felt different and felt like a different type of women's match, because you have two different types of women competitors going at it here. Nikki goes right for her. She Belair hits a massive forearm to the back as they're brawling on the outside. This was a fun, explosive beginning. I really dug it. Nikki tosses Belair into the steel steps. Back in the ring, Nikki covers her, only gets one. Okay. She does a monkey flip on Nikki Cross. She catches Bianca goes for a kick. Nikki catches it. She shoves her down. But then Belair catches Nikki Cross as she tries to do a crossbody. Nikki Cross crossbody. And then does an overhead slam because she is a strong, strong lady. She puts the boots to Nikki. Chinlock on Cross to slow things down a bit, as any good heel has to do. She whips Cross into the ropes. Hits a Rana, but Belair comes out with her strength to get back in control. She does a nice standing moonsault onto Cross's back. Was flat on the mat. Nikki delivers some forearms. Belair does a double elevated chicken wing. But Nikki rolls her into a cover and kicks out. Belair eventually is in the Tree of Woe, and she and Nikki goes for some of those good old mud hole stompings. Ref counts her off, but she goes back in again because she's Nikki Cross, damn it. It's a big splash in the corner. Running bulldog. Nikki's on fire. She does a top rope crossbody that lands smack dab in the middle of Bianca Belair's person. She covers her, kicks out for two. Belair battles back and delivers a sound barrier breaking forearm on Nikki Cross. The sound it made. Follows up with a spear, covers, and gets 2.9. Belair then goes for two other covers. She's losing her mind. She doesn't understand how to... this is the story here at some point. Well, not exactly here, but at some point. Belair doesn't know what to do to put Nikki Cross away. She's been undefeated. She's not losing her matches. She usually knows how to put her opponents away, but not Nikki Cross. Anyway, she goes for two other covers, and then the third time she converts it into a deadlift and hits a big sit-out powerbomb, but Nikki kicks out, and Belair cannot believe it. This is the point where she starts losing her mind, where she's desperate. There's glitter all over the goddamn ring. I loved that Belair was frustrated here, that she was emoting like she did. This is stuff that we hadn't seen for her, at least not this persona of her, all that much yet. She tells Cross in the corner to stay down, but Nikki Cross is just looking up at her with a smile. She's giggling. She's enjoying this. She gorilla presses Nikki Cross. She has her over her head, and she says EST, and she does squats as she's doing it. That was really impressive. Really impressive. Nikki goes for a sleeper hold, reverses it into a scorpion death drop. She covers Belair and gets a 2.9 is there as well. Cross goes up to the top rope. She jumps off and she gets the hair whip. That reverses fortunes for Belair. We have some top rope shenanigans. Superplex by Nikki Cross. And, you know, when I think about it there very, very quickly, I think, you know, with the hair whip thing, they should maybe they should do like they used to do with Lex Luger, where, you know, Lex Luger had legitimately had a piece of metal in his arm from a motorcycle accident. And they sort of use it. They started using that sporadically in kayfabe, where if you got hit by Luger's forearm, you know, it'd be like a foreign object. It'd knock you out. And in some matches, he couldn't use it. Or if he used it, it was a disqualification. Maybe they should do that with the hair whip. I'd like that. It'd be a nice callback. But anyway, the lights go out. All right. No, sorry. So both ladies are on the ground. The lights go out. And Aleister Black's guitar riff, that his intro to his theme music, plays. Full Sail goes bananas, right? Lights come back on and he is sitting in the ring. Bianca Belair is nowhere to be found. That doesn't matter. Nikki's on, she's flat on her stomach. She looks up, they look at each other. And immediately, and you gotta love Full Sail for this. Full Sail understands the kayfabe. They get into the storylines. They start chanting, Nikki's got a secret. She's rolling around because she's excited to see him. And, you know, crazy Nikki Cross, she's reveling in all this chaos. But Aleister goes like this. She stops. He goes like this. And she's mesmerized. And she starts crawling on her stomach over to him. And this was fantastic. The camera angles, the shots here were amazing. And she crawls up to him. And he's sitting on the ground and he's seething. He says, tell me. And everyone in Full Sail is telling everyone to shut up. Everyone's going, shh. And she goes up to him very, very slowly. She goes up to his ear. She whispers something in his ear. And he starts to quiver with rage. And he's mad. He's seething with unbridled anger. And that's how the show ends. Okay, first and foremost, I am super stoked that Aleister Black is back. That's fine. I'm glad. If his injury didn't require that much more time off, I'm glad, because this is great. Second of all, this whole thing where he was sort of telling Nikki to calm down and come over here. This felt good because I feel that since they started allowing Aleister Black to cut his own promos, a lot of his mystique had sort of evaporated. Now he just, the way he delivered his lines and the tone of his voice, his inflections, he just sounded like another dude. Whereas most of his run, he barely spoke. His whole feud with Velveteen Dream was Dream trying to get him to say his name. So this was important to return this mystique to him. And that was fantastic. And to be perfectly honest, the way the way Nikki Cross was crawling back to the ring, crawling back over to him, and you know, the angles that they had and the way she was looking at him and he was looking at her. That kind of got me, kind of turned me on, to be perfectly honest. Big return, Aleister Black. He's mad. Can't wait to see the denouement of who knocked out Aleister Black. Woo. We're going to go with the Mae Young Classic. I'm running a bit long tonight, guys. I had a lot to talk about in the others, but we're going to go through this here. Mae Young Classic, where they had the quarterfinals starting tonight. Started off with Lacey Lane versus Mako Satomura. Lacey Lane advanced 2 weeks ago in a flash victory against Tenari Konchi. And right now, both of Satomura's, for her two previous matches have been in the top five best performances of the tournament right now. So I was looking forward to see what Satomura was able to do with a relative rookie to the game here. And to be honest here, Satomura kind of chewed her up and spit her out. Goes in for a lot of kicks. They do a test of strength to start to begin with. And Satomura completely overpowers Lane goes for a chop, and Satomura's like, nope, no chops. Sort of no sells it a la New Japan. Lane goes for a kick. Satomura grabs it. Then she puts the leg down, you know, in a show of sportsmanship, extends her hand to Lacey Lane. Lacey Lane refuses it. Mako's like, oh, so it's going to be like that, is it? And she basically... she roundhouse kicks Lane to the face, and that's pretty much the story of the match. Lane tries to fight back, but Satomura is all over the place with her kicks, whether they be spinning heels. She got a crazy axe kick to her back, to Lane's back. And this all ends very, very mercifully with a Death Valley driver by Satomura. And that's that. This probably was Satomura's weakest match of the tournament. And I think what this essentially did was show that Lane needs a little more polish yet. But, I mean, she's been wrestling for a little over a year or close to a year. I mean... I'm be excited to see her in a couple of years to see how far she's grown, because she has so many naturals. She's fantastic. But I think it exposed a little bit that she's not quite up there yet. Io Shirai faced Deonna Purrazzo, Fightful alumni Deonna Purrazzo. I feel Shirai's Mae Young Classic so far has been okay. But for all the hype, man, it kind of feel that she should be stunning us a little more. I'm waiting for the show stealer, basically. Was looking forward to this match because I was figuring if there was a match where these two could get the best out of each other, it'd be against Deonna Purrazzo. Test of strength to begin, but Deonna goes right off the bat for the arm. Her strategy is pretty clear, isn't it? She tackles Io down, gets a Hurricane Rana on Io, but she lands on her feet. She sends Deonna to the outside and does that crazy crossbody dive onto the outside. Well, crazy. It's not crazy, but it looks really good because she doesn't dive head first. She dives, but turns in the air, and it becomes like a crossbody. It's really cool. I like that. She slams Deonna down, goes hits some knees to the body, goes for a jackknife cover only gets two. There's a bunch of strikes here going on. Deonna gets a hip toss, backflip, basement dropkick. She does a backflip into a basement dropkick on Io, which is really good. They're both exhausted at this point. Deonna Purrazzo hitting a side Russian leg sweep, which is making a comeback. I'm seeing it more and more. The side Russian leg sweep. Long forgotten, never forgotten. Armbar by, she gets an armbar, Deonna does, on Io. So everyone starts getting antsy. Io then gets Deonna down to the mat on a cross face, but Deonna reverses it into a pin to break the hold. Io then takes her down with a palm strike, hits a 619 springboard missile drop kick, goes for a cover, only gets two. Deonna keeps Io from hitting the moonsault and then goes for three Germans, but then covers, only gets two, and heads right back into the arm bar. Io gets a cross face on Deonna. Deonna bottles out of it. She gets a ripcord knee to the face, double knees to the corner by Io, goes for her top rope moonsault that doesn't really completely connect. She overshot it a bit, but it's still enough to get the win. Io Shirai going for it. Again, I don't think this is the star match that Io Shirai can deliver. So, but it you know, next round, semifinals, why not? Tegan Nox versus Rhea Ripley. We knew this one was coming. I mean, it was kind of, you know, try to stay spoiler-free, but I mean, it was very, very close. Look, you saw how badly, we all saw how badly she landed when she did her dive straight off the bat. And what really broke my heart here is how she did not want to stop. The referee was calling for the exits. They had the medical staff come in and she just wanted to go, and kudos to her. She tried. She really did. She put the effort in. She was like, no, I'm doing this. She tore her ACL last year. Let's not forget that kept her out of the Mae Young Classic 2017. And this is her good knee or her good leg that she blew out. She eats a drop kick from Rhea Ripley, and that was it. She starts throwing the X. She can't take it anymore. That breaks my heart. I really like Nixon Newell, Tegan Nox. I really, really do. Rhea Ripley will be fine, but man, what a bummer. Main event was Mia Yim versus Toni Storm. Yim is in control very quickly in this match, Toni Storm basically works the babyface in peril for most of the match here. I apologize. I'm going to have to run through this a little quickly because I'm really short on time. But this was a fine match. It was probably my favorite match of Toni Storm's this tournament. Yim has a nice combination of strikes, palm strikes, kicks, and it ends with a Pele kick. She covers Toni Storm, but gets a 2.9. Storm kicks her in the injured hand, which I always think is funny, and then headbutts her down. They're both down. They're exhausted at this point. They get back on their knees. They're striking each other. Forearms, slaps. Storm hits a German suplex. Yim counters with a side suplex of her own and into a bridge, goes for the cover and gets another 2.9. Does an electric chair slam, goes for another cover for two. I thought there were a lot of covers. If I had more time and I could deep dive more into this one, I tell you my main issue with this match was there were too many covers, and that sort of took me out of it. There were a lot of covers early on that didn't make sense, and it really got to me. Storm avoids getting the soul food and uses the bad hand to get the upper hand. This is what you pay for, folks. It's that kind of banter. And Toni hits the German suplex, the Tiger Driver, as she likes to call the Storm Zero, for the win. We're getting Toni Storm versus Mako Satomura next week. I am all for that. So, guys, this is how we are going to wrap up this edition of the NXT 205 Live Mae Young Classic combo. Got a lot of stuff to talk about. These shows are getting more and more stacked. Man, it's hard to fit everything in an hour, but thank you so very much for tuning in. Let people know about Fightful Select. Have them subscribe. Tell them how cool everything is. Talk about all the content. Send them to FightfulSlang.com so that they can see all the wonderful stuff that they can get. And follow me on my own social media, tinyurl.com/Mr. Warren Hayes on my YouTube channel or on Twitter @Mr. Warren Hayes. Thank you so much again for tuning in. And I'll see you next time.